House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is February 17th, 2016. We have two bills on the agenda today, and we're going to open the first one. We're going to go out of order and call for a hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1567 and call Senator Thatcher, please.
Members of the committee, Chair Barker, this is Senate Bill 1567, and it is brought to us today by Senator Thatcher. There is no revenue or fiscal impact. This measure creates the crime of criminal impersonation. Impersonation is when a person intentionally poses as another without permission and with the intent to injure that person by communicating to a third party with intent to deceive that third party that the person is the individual. This impersonation is currently not prohibited in Oregon. Senate Bill 1567 makes this representation an A misdemeanor and also creates a cause of action for victims. There are no amendments, and it should be ready to move today if you're so inclined.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry, Senator Thatcher. Too long.
Thank you, Chair Barker and members of the committee. I'm Kim Thatcher, Senator from District 13, and I just want to share a brief story. I think there's going to be more expert testimony later whenever you decide to do that, but for now, I was planning to share a story with you about a man named Jeremiah Stipe. He's a California man who was splitting up with his wife, and he got very upset. And he got so upset, in fact, that he decided to go online and make profiles in her image and pretend to be her. Okay, and it gets worse. He decided he would arrange for men to come over and rape his wife, knock down the door, and rape his wife. And he did that, making it sound like that's what she is into, that she was asking for this. So the man ended, so there was a man that came over, knocked down the door, raped this woman at knife point, and in the end, this man went to prison for rape, and Stipe went to prison too, but only as an accomplice. So that's what this is trying to get at. There are other situations I've heard of that there other testimony might share with you, but that's just one story, and it's happening more in Oregon, where they're impersonating somebody to arrange an assault. This also builds on the statute of identity theft. Right now, identity theft has been interpreted by courts, whatever, to mean that you want to get something out of another person. You're taking on their identity in order to steal from their accounts or get some sort of other monetary benefit. The statute provides no protection when your identity has been stolen with the intent to intimidate you, harass you, or even expose you to physical harm, which is what this bill is attempting to do, is close that gap. It was developed, this bill, by the Oregon Department of Justice in consultation with prosecutors, defense attorneys, and the ACLU. And this is what came of that. It makes it a crime to impersonate another with the intent to intimidate, threaten, harm, or harass. It also gives the ability to victims to seek justice themselves by allowing them to sue their stalkers and harassers in civil court. There are more and more cases coming out. I had a conversation with some DAs the other day, and there's just, it's becoming a really sad situation. It'd be nice to close that gap, so I urge an aye vote.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Senator Thatcher? Thank you, Senator, for coming over. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Call Jackie Sandmeyer and Aaron Knott, please. By the way, her district is the only district in Oregon that has a veteran of the American Revolutionary War buried in her district.
Wow.
In St. Louis, Paul.
Good to know.
William Cannon.
And Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Aaron Knott. I am the legislative director for the Attorney General in the Oregon Department of Justice. Since you've heard me testify before, you can probably intuit that something is wrong with my voice. So I'll get through this as best I can. Senate Bill 1567 was an offshoot of Senate Bill 188, which was the so-called anti-revenge porn bill that we dealt with last session. And when we put that together, which we did in consultation with that same group, the prosecutors, OCDLA, the ACLU, and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, it was like flipping over the dark underbelly of the internet. And since then, victims, and they've, to the last, they have been women, have come either forward to legislators or to the Department of Justice and told some new and uniquely horrible story that we hadn't heard before that didn't exist 10 years ago. So I feel like this is the fourth bill in this area in 2 years, I think, and I suspect there will be more. The fact pattern that we're dealing with in this one is very much what was described by Senator Thatcher. It's where an individual impersonate somebody else online, and this is often done, but not always, in a romantic or a domestic violence context. And they impersonate them for the intent to do something other than defraud them. Our identity theft statute is in the property crimes section of our criminal code. The reason it's there isn't because your identity is the property. It's because your identity is being used to steal property. It's all about getting something from you. So there's a real lack of coverage right now. Now, the same group that put the revenge porn bill together put this one together, and we had a long time to work on it. We started way back last summer. So there's a lot of constitutional language that those of you who are veterans of the Judiciary Committee will recognize. I won't go through it unless you have questions about it. What I think I can say, and I have authorization from the defense attorneys and the ACLU to share this, is that we are all confident in the constitutionality of this bill. Any restriction on speech is very, very carefully regulated. In Oregon, we have the most robust free speech protections in the country, and that can make it very hard to make any intrusions into speech. But the Supreme Court has given us a path. I believe we've walked it successfully with Senate Bill 1567. I'm open for any questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Knott?
Yeah.
Representative.
I have two, if I may.
Okay, please.
I'm looking at Section 4.
Oh, yeah.
The public servant section. And this defines a veteran, I assume of any war, as a public servant.
Chair Barker, Representative Grinlick, I'm very glad you asked that question. I should have mentioned this. So Section 3 and 4 are changes made by legislative counsel only. They weren't a substantive part of the bill. The reason that those changes were made is because there was already a crime under the name of criminal impersonation in the criminal code. We talked with legislative counsel when we came forward with this proposal, which in most other states is being referred to as criminal impersonation. What we realized at that time is what in Oregon we had been calling criminal impersonation was criminal impersonation of a public servant. That's what this existing crime was. So they made a modification to this section, which I believe is purely cosmetic, where they moved from what used to be at line 27 of page 1, an active member or veteran of the armed services of the United States, that portion of the definition of public servant, which already existed in law, was moved to a different section for organizational reasons. It's now a standalone Section 4. Okay.
Do you have a question, if I may?
Please.
We're creating a new crime here. Is without this crime, are most of the people who've done these horrendous things that you heard about convicted of some other crime?
Chair Barker, Representative Grinlick, every case that I am personally aware of in Oregon has resulted in non-prosecution. I'm only aware of non-prosecution. And that the problem with the identity theft statute is a real one. That comes from a court of appeals decision that requires some monetary or benefit aspect to an identity theft. In California, they did ultimately convict the individual that Senator Thatcher mentioned. However, he wasn't convicted until the rape was completed. At that point, he was convicted as an accomplice to the rape. One of the victims who I met in Oregon found herself in a very similar situation where her ex had gotten on a site, I think it was called fling.com, and had said, in essence, there's a group sex activity, everybody's invited, and it's at my house, it's at 9 p.m. She was only tipped off that these men who she had not met were coming to her home because she started receiving text messages of their genitalia. So she asked one of them, why am I getting these? And they said, well, we're going to be at your house at 9. So she moved out of the home. So she was never exposed to anything that would be a sex crime or offensive physical conduct. So everything in between, you know, the stress of moving out, of staying out of your house for 3 weeks, of being terrified to go back, is not covered under existing law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're talking... This is online, right? For the most part, or all, or partial, or what? That's kind of part A of my question.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, the Electronic Frontier Foundation was one of the groups that negotiated this bill. When we first put it together, we made it so that it was online only, and they objected. The objection is because the identity theft statute, two reasons. Number one, the identity theft statute doesn't make that distinction. I can steal your identity online, obviously, but I can also go into a bank and represent that I'm you. Similarly, these harms can be effectuated in non-cyberspace. So it was the feeling of the group that it made more sense to cover everything and not leave yet another pocket of uncovered criminal conduct.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Then the part B of that would be, you gave the example of one particular website. I'm thinking for the most part, these kind of things probably happen on that kind of a website. The major social media websites, probably, because that's where it's easy to impersonate somebody. I mean, I can open an account today and call it Aaron Knott. You know, it's so simple. Is there any problems with these companies that run these sites? Will this cause any? I don't even know what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say. Do you see any problems down the road with them fighting this?
Chair Barker, Representative Post, I don't. Section 230 of the Federal Communications Decency Act makes it impossible for federal preemption reasons to enforce, even if we wanted to, that kind of an argument against an internet content provider who's just hosting content. I don't know of a way to apply liability to that body under this sort of a theory. Now, I think federal law is very clear. You could make the same argument, however, about identity theft. You could say, well, if eBay is subject to identity theft, if they facilitate identity theft, they don't facilitate it, but it happens on eBay and it happens on Amazon, it happens on other websites. That's not their fault. They're just the host. I don't think they've ever been held criminally accountable for something like that.
Okay, that's good.
Nor would I hope that they were.
Yeah. The only reason I ask that, I actually have that personal experience, and eBay was it. I had an account opened in my name, and I bought and sold stuff. Didn't know that. And though we're talking about two different things, kind of, that you just really triggered some bad memories with my mind. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Aaron, I'm looking at 161.005 and 162.365, and I don't see where it narrows it down to what you're describing as it being on the internet or, you know, or a computer or whatever for communication. Maybe you can. I'll tell you.
He said it wasn't.
It wasn't. Okay. But you've mentioned that now a couple different times for us. So is it open then for like telephone as well?
And Chair Barker, Representative Olson, if you had the appropriate criminal intent, if you emulated somebody else's identity by phone for a long period of time. Let's change our fact pattern a little bit. Instead of getting on the internet and pretending to be your ex-wife, you have your sister call these men off of Craigslist postings or whatever and relay the exact same information. Come to my house, kick down the door. It would be happening offline. But the harm and the constitutional tests that apply to the harm would be exactly the same.
So could the follow-up, please. Could the communicating also be in person?
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, I don't know why not. I mean, and again, back here I'm resorting to a conventional identity theft as an analog. If I go into the bank and I have taken representative post, driver's license, and I've glued my picture on it, and then I say, I am representative post, and I want you to issue me checks under this account, and then I pass those checks, I assumed his identity in person. That is a valid form of identity theft. I think it would be similarly here, though in a very rare case.
So I'm thinking, okay, so just follow up on that. So let's say I hire, through a conspiracy, Representative Leininger to represent my wife. She dolls up and everything, blonde hair, all that, to try to replicate my wife, and then approaches you. That would fit this crime.
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, that would turn entirely on the constitutional test of what your criminal intent was. Did the harm result? Was the harm reasonable, and was the harm intended? So if your conspiracy with Representative Leininger was designed to cause injury to me, did cause injury, that injury was reasonable, then it would meet the constitutional test.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you. Please. I did remember to identify yourself for the record.
Yes. Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Jackie Sandmeyer. I'm the campus coordinator for the Oregon Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force. The Oregon Sexual Assault Task Force is a nonprofit, non-governmental statewide agency. We have approximately over 100 multidisciplinary members across the state of Oregon, including law enforcement, sexual assault nurse examiners, direct service providers, so advocates who work with victims of sexual assault crimes, as well as working with direct service providers on our higher education institution campuses as well. Our mission is to facilitate and support a collaborative and survivor-centered approach to both the prevention of as well as the response to sexual violence here in Oregon. We accomplish this mission through providing multidisciplinary training as well as providing technical assistance to sexual violence first responders throughout the state of Oregon, but also as well as nationally. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 1567. This bill would serve as an important mechanism to hold offenders who choose to use technology in this way to gain access to victims by criminalizing the impersonation of another person with intent to harm, humiliate, threaten, or intimidate. Senate Bill 1567, much like folks before me have said, would very much so build upon the work that this committee did in 2015 when the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 188, which is commonly known as the criminalization of criminal distribution of intimate images. And it would also keep our laws here in Oregon up to date with what you've heard is a very fast-paced and ever-changing digital age in which offenders are finding new ways to gain access to victims every day. This bill would very much so positively impact the lives of victims here in Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Sure.
Close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 1567.
Chair Barker, I move we...
Senate Bill, I'm sorry.
I move Senate Bill 1567 to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Leininger,
recommendation.
Representative Leininger moves Senate Bill 1567 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm always a bit reluctant to create any new crimes, but I'm going to be a yes on this here, but I might change my mind before it gets to the floor.
Thank you, Representative, and I just would point out that, you know, like 10 years ago, we wouldn't have needed this crime, so yeah. It's a new crime because there's new way of committing
new
it.
New life, yes.
Yeah, is what's causing it. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll have Representative Springer and Representative Williamson co-carry, please. Okay, open a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 1554A.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1554A comes to you from Senator Przanski at the request of the Estate Planning Section of the Oregon State Bar. This came out of committee with a unanimous vote and passed across the floor with a 27-2 vote. As you might recall, we had, well, this bill talks about what should happen to your digital life after you pass away or become incapacitated. Now, you might recall we had two bills on this in the last session. Neither of them made it out because we couldn't come to any sort of agreement on what should happen. What you have here is a carefully negotiated agreement on that subject. Briefly, the measure allows companies who hold digital material for a user to offer a user a choice on what happens to that information when the user either dies or becomes incapacitated. If the offer is properly made and the user makes a selection that trumps any other options that might be around in documentation, such as in a will or in a user agreement. If the option isn't given by the custodian, the provider of the service, or the user declines to make a choice, then other documentation determines what happens to that information. That could be in a will or a power of attorney or a trust document. If the user does not have any other planning documents, the terms of service take effect. If the terms of service do not address the issue, then the default allows a catalog of communications, a list of different communications to be given to the fiduciary, excuse me, and then the content can either be obtained through other channels or released in a court order. Custodians can use discretion in allowing access to the content, and fiduciaries can petition courts for the information that is needed. There's no amendment. It's ready to move today.
Okay, maybe I'll pull up one more chair and have four people come up. Jeff Cheyenne, Megan Schrader, Lane Shetterly, and Phil Donovan, please.
Good evening.
If I mispronounce the name, I apologize.
Defer to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, today before you as a commissioner on the Uniform Law Commission from Oregon. Very briefly, the Uniform Law Commission is an organization of the states. It exists by statute in all 50 states plus the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. The Uniform Law Commission drafts laws that are intended to be enacted by the states to facilitate a uniformity of law through state action where uniformity is desirable and achievable. That is the role and mission of the Uniform Law Commission. And this certainly is an area where uniformity is both desirable, and I think we've demonstrated over the past year since the end of the last legislative session that is also achievable, thankfully. Chana did an excellent job in summarizing the bill. I will spare you that, except to say that our experience here in Oregon is just exactly what happened around the country, where there were basically two different versions of this bill, of this act. One sponsored through the Uniform Law Commission, another through the tech industry, both of them coming from philosophically different directions, and they played out to a stalemate across the country. That brought the parties back to the table over the course of last summer, and the result of that is this revised Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Act. When I testified in front of the Senate, I reported that it had been introduced in 13 states. I checked just before I came over today, and the count, at least on the Uniform Law Commission website, is up to 20 states today. It's a very robust enactment activity in the first year of a new uniform act, especially given that this is an off year for several states. So I think with that, I'll just leave it to Chana's excellent summary and the witnesses that you have here. I do appreciate that I'm here with Phil and Megan this afternoon. This was a case where we were in opposition last session, and I feel much more comfortable being here at the table with them, expressing our mutual support for the bill. And I want to thank them their companies and the groups that they represent through them for the work that we were able to do in this past year to come to a consensus. Like any compromise, I wish I had a little more in the bill. They probably wish they had a little more, or maybe hadn't given up a few things. We hope that that's the case, because that usually is the hallmark of a good compromise, and I commend it to you.
Okay, thank you.
I'll jump in. Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Donovan here on behalf of Google with a brief statement of support, and I'd like to open by saying it's particularly important to note and thank this committee for the hard work that you put into it this last year. We are pleased to have found common accord with the Uniform Law Commission in both of our efforts to address access issues to electronic information of decedents and others. The revised Uniform Act and this bill accommodate the needs of settling and administering estates, providing full or limited access to information for guardians, holders of powers of attorney, and others assisting people who may be incapacitated, while respecting the account holder's rights to privacy. In addition to commitments made to users, custodians' obligations under the Federal Electronic Communications Privacy Act prohibit disclosures of content or account information except under specific circumstances. The Uniform Act and this bill appropriately recognize these limitations and provide a consistent framework for anyone petitioning for information related to the contents of another's account. And we're pleased to have shared this statement in 20 other states. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Megan Schrader. I'm the executive director of TechNet in the Northwest region. TechNet represents over 70 of the nation's leading companies in the fields of information technology, social and internet media, green technology, and venture capital. We, too, are pleased to have reached an agreement with the Uniform Law Commission on a very important piece of legislation. This is obviously a very sensitive issue involving extremely complicated legal landscape. We certainly appreciate the consideration of this measure that is in common accord with the Uniform Law Commission. This is especially important to have uniformity in these sorts of legal landscapes that affect people across the country and in many different ways. So thank you so much for your consideration. Happy to help answer any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the House Judiciary Committee, my name is Jeffrey Sheen. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Samuels, Yolen, Cantor in Portland, Oregon. I also am past president or past chair of the estate planning section. I'm here today on behalf of the estate planning section to testify in support of Senate Bill 1554 as amended. This process, it gets to my recollection, actually started out in the 2013 session when we tried to hammer out some provisions there without the benefit of the input from the Uniform Law Commission. So it's kind of heartening to, since I've sat through all three rounds of this legislation, to see it finally come to fruition, that we do have a bill that all sides can agree with and support. One of the things I think that this bill does, that the public needs to know about this bill, is it does require account holders who have digital communications to communicate with their digital account holder what their wishes are. Google has adopted a fairly significant program that I think that has sort of become kind of a model, hopefully, for other social media folks to follow in giving the user, if there's a timeout on their use of the Google connection, what do they want? What does the user want to direct Google to do with that? And that's going to be important. And this legislation requires people, if the provisions of it are to be followed in something other than the default language of the Terms of Service Agreement, they're going to have to be proactive in telling the service provider what they want. Attorneys in doing estate planning are also going to have to become proactive with their clients to ensure that their wills and trusts and powers of attorney have directions in those documents as well, authorizing the named fiduciaries to act on their behalf. And these are all important considerations that will take effect when this bill moves forward. So we do support the bill, and I thank you for your time to in consideration, and I'm available for questions, and we recommend a passage with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Can I ask?
Oh, I'm sorry. But yes, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you. I was looking at Section 13 in the bill, which seems to say if there's a trust in force and no other instructions have been given, that the custodian will then give the trustee the list of communications and allow the trustee to ask for specifics inside that list. Is that the case?
I'm sorry, what, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, what was the last part of that question?
I'm a trustee of somebody's estate, and I asked for the content. I asked for the catalog, which, I, as I understand it, is the list of email messages, say.
Outside of the envelope.
Yes, that's correct.
And then having gotten that, the trustee can ask for content of any of the items in that catalog?
Let me take a stab at that, if I may, Mr. Chair or Representative Greenlee. The way that works, the way the catalog works is, as Phil said, it's the outside of the envelope. So what you may learn from a catalog is that beneficiary or the trustee, whoever, sorry, the trustor, has been communicating with Bank of America. And then, so that what the trustee can do with that information, if now the trustee is becoming responsible for the administration of the trust for the beneficiary, the trustee can contact Bank of America directly and certify their authority under the trust and get this additional information from Bank of America. It wouldn't get more information from the custodian.
It would only get the list of...
That's correct. It will point the trustee to possible sources of additional information or assets. Did I get that right? Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at my spreadsheet here, and so the custodian may require specific identification of the account and evidence linking the account to the trust.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, panel.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, I move Senate Bill...
The work session.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Barker, I move Senate Bill 1554A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Langer moves Senate Bill 1554A to the floor with a due pass. Discussion. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Would anybody like to carry that bill? Representative Post will be the carrier.
Oh, good luck.
Any right. Further business come before the committee, we stand adjourned. Thank you, committee.
Some questions.
No hearing tomorrow.
No hearing tomorrow. No hearing tomorrow. No hearing tomorrow.